Dr. Goldworthy is the Director of Research and Development for the Academic Edge, an educational research group that specializes in understanding and supporting health behavior and behavior change. He has over 15 years of experience running a wide range of federally funded research efforts targeting health behavior and health behavior change. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Briggs. Like Dr. Harper, I'm a little tired. I bet you guys are too. My name is Rick Goldsworthy, and as Dr. Briggs mentioned, I direct a group that conducts research, but I primarily work with Indiana University. I'm what you could call content agnostic. I work in a lot of different fields, so if you talk to me, I kind of worry about what is something I need to change, what's a problem out there, and how do we think about changing it. So I float around between HIV, STD, suicide prevention, depression, a lot of different areas. And today, and by the way, I love stories. Part of my dissertation was how to integrate story-driven design into the interventions that we do. Marty Fishbein was on the committee, and it was really kind of looking at Bandura's work. So Frere and the notion of co-intentionality as the way we want to teach is a really good thing. That's years ago, and all this stuff was popping into my head as you were speaking, and I was like, all right. Bruner's notion of it was a provisional amanuensis, is the way he referred to it. It's like, how do we help people get their stories out? It's the idea of community-based participatory research as well. Today, I'm going to talk about something called expedited partner treatment and a little work we've been doing there, too. I'm a little wound up. I've been living on coffee today because I'm on my third presentation in the cycles that go through. By the way, a little gift for you if you came today. If you're done with Starbucks and you do like coffee, there is another coffee shop called the Chinatown Coffee. It's about 3 blocks from here. It's on 5th and H. They have really good French press coffee and other coffee. Check it out if you get a chance. I was there way too much this morning. So that said, expedited partner treatment. Anybody know what that is? Are you here because you do know what it is? Great. So what expedited partner treatment is, you go into a doctor, and the doctor says, you have a bacteriological STD. Congratulations. You're really excited. In a lot of states, and promoted by the CDC, that doctor can not only treat you, but can give you extra medication, prescription medication, in order to give to your partner. So you have a treatable STD. Predominantly, it's for chlamydia and gonorrhea, but it can also be done it's predominantly for chlamydia and gonorrhea. I'll get into some details in a minute. So what I'm talking about today is some capacity building. We got charged with, first, helping design materials that would allow implementation in different sites, different jurisdictions where this is taking hold. So some of the things that we had to do was look at patient materials, look at what kind of protocols would have to be in place, and also educational materials for the patients and the providers. Anyway, to go back, this thing can be called PDPT, which is Patient Delivered Partner Therapy. It can be called a whole lot of different things, including what I mentioned before, expedited partner therapy. So we have that. It increases, you know, the treatment of potentially infected partners, reduces prevalence and incident rates, because obviously people get treated faster. Now, there are some issues, and one of the tough things about messaging is how you incorporate in there that, you know, not only you may go get treatment, I take it home to your partner, but really we'd like you to go back in and get checked, get a check of cure as well. But that's the notion. So in terms of implementation, there haven't been any materials for this prior to this project. This project is about 3 years, going into 3 years, and we started off, we didn't do any materials development. All we wanted to understand, and you can look up some of this stuff in Journal STD and SDI, was, are people interested in doing this at all, and what are the barriers and facilitators to doing it? So we jumped all the way back, did sort of elicitation work, and did some quantitative research on who would do this and why, and who wouldn't and why, because that's sort of the foundation of any sort of program development, is what the hell are people doing, and what are you going to do about it? So there were no standardized tools, so the CDC funded us to take care of that. Issue number two, however, is there's no single protocol for doing this. CDC provides, and they do this, they provided Well, we'd like you to do this. It's their recommendations, but there's no mandate for how you do it. There's no mandate for what it looks like, and that you even have to do it. And whether or not you're even allowed to do it varies by state, although there are other groups who are helping get regulations and policy changes to enable it in different states. So, varying by jurisdiction, we're charged initially, make a package for this. Make a medical package that you can do for this. I'm like, okay, I think I can handle that. And you're going to tell them that they have to use it, right? No. Okay. So that's not going to work very well. So varying by jurisdiction, meaning different states can decide which infections can be treated. And this happens. Some states, it's just chlamydia. That's New York. They just brought it online, by the way. Some states, it can be both. Wyoming, for example, can do both. And some states, and I don't know of any examples of states that do just gonorrhea. But it varies by that. It varies by who can participate. Folks out in San Francisco will allow men who have sex with men. Other states will not, because that's actually antithetical to what the guidelines say in CDC. But for obvious reasons, San Francisco is going to go ahead and do it. How it's delivered, you might give somebody a script. You might give somebody the actual medication. There are variances in that. And it also varies by what messages have to go along. Everybody, when you enact legislation, has their little imprimatur on it. You know, I want to say this. So one of the biggest challenges is we created a set of baseline materials, but then we weren't really able to, you know, roll them out all at once. So our goals were to develop this sort of baseline set of materials. It was grounded in research, a lot of theory behind it. I happen to be wedded to reasoned action theory kind of an approach, but you know, it's all basically the consensus kind of behavioral change model type stuff. We are now charged, in addition to creating that, with providing training and technical assistance through the end of this year. If you happen to be involved in a public health clinic, we are available to do tailoring and technology, tailoring and tech assistance to the different organizations to get it in place and rolling along. So we used iterative design. We involve our end users. We don't do it in communities because it's not really a community type of thing. It's more about how do we find out why you are or aren't doing something, and how can we generalize it across the nation. Very first thing we did was decide that it was badly named. Because if you say to it, when we conducted focus groups and we said, what does expedited partner whatever, because there were several different words, we used all of them, mean to you, and people would be like, no idea what you're talking about. Well, are you likely to do it? No. So we asked for input and other things, and we ended up giving it a brand, if you will. It's partner care. So when we referred to it as partner care, people were more likely to do it. Side-by-side examples, here's APT, will you participate? Here's partner care. We swapped out the words. Which one did they say they'd be more likely to do? Partner care. So we found out, well, okay, here's some proof that you ought to use at least that wording. You can use whatever else you want somewhere in there, but it helps kind of engage people. Small thing, easy enough to do, but often gets overlooked when we do stuff. So along the way, we built a patient and a partner portal. It's got a case study of Denver's implementation. We're working on a case study for New York and another location. This is like, how would you actually adopt this in a clinic type stuff? So it's supporting the rollout. That's the provider portion. There are video cases of patients, adolescents, adults, you know, going through the process. Those are useful in two ways. They can train the providers on how to do it, but they can also be shown as part of rolling loops inside clinic environments you didn't ask me about that. Can I participate in that when we show the patients? We have some animated segments, and if I'm feeling really brave, I didn't upload them, but I may try to launch one because it's only 2 minutes. It explains what all this is, and it's loud and obnoxious, and it'll probably wake everybody up. And also some templates for some partner from patient information stuff. You know, like, what do you hand out when you do this, and what's it look like? As I said, the biggest problem is that it's not one thing across the country, so we've been working with different states to try to tailor and implement. So as I said, we have the two kinds of video cases, the partner care in action, which is the big picture. What we do, and this ties into Dr. Harper's discussion a little bit as well, what we do when we generate a case study, when I'm interested in something, is I create, who knows what a simulated patient is? Simulated patient? No, medical education. Simulated patients are not high-tech people. They are actors trained to take on a role of a patient in a situation. That's all simulated patient means. And what we do is we train actors to take on case roles, and they go into real clinics that are doing something we're interested in, and we run them through the process. three, four, or five times, depending on how diverse we want the cases to be. And when we do that, we also afterwards, this is the tie-in to EMCA, we and Frere again, we ask for reflections. So, Dr. Case, why did you do this when you were talking to the patient instead of this other thing? We get an answer. So, when you implemented it at the clinic level, how did this affect your life? To the clinic manager. We ask them to think about what they're doing and why they did it. We also generally ask a third party, in this case usually Dr. Dennis Fortenberry, to review the videos and say where he thinks errors were. Because again, I learn a whole lot about a lot of things I really never wanted to learn a lot about, but I'm not supposed to be an expert on any of these projects. My job is to roll around the sides and say, I don't know about that, and find people who help me out in terms of the actual content areas. Although I've done a lot of stuff in STD prevention. I've been involved in everything from an interactive STD curriculum back on CD-ROM for kids to a web-based version of that that's underway now, to training docs on how to conduct better STI interviews with patients. You know, they often forget to ask because they don't want to ask. So we have those. We have the website itself, the patient site that talks about things. We have this what is partner care? What is partner care is one of these quick zips. It's an animated movie. This one may actually be a flash segment, but we have them both available in QuickTime and otherwise. These are freely available. Anybody can have them for any purpose they want to. They're on YouTube. They're on the partner care site. We're happy to change them throughout the course of the funding period, as I said before. So we have the site itself. We have a collection of templates. We started off with the patient information. You know, we have to have something to hand to the patient to tell them what they're doing, but we also have to have something for the patient to give to their partner, and we also gave them something that the patient can watch with their partner. Those things can then be modified to be appropriate to whether or not you're doing chlamydia or gonorrhea, if you're handing out pills or you're handing out a script and what it is for different locations. So we had to be wary of all these things as we were working on how you would do capacity building. So we ended up, and this is what the sheets ended up looking like. Again, went through a lot of different form of development, had the SMEs, the subject matter experts, review everything as we always do when we're doing these kinds of projects. iKibbutz about look and feel. There is always something that somebody wants to change a little bit. You may look at this and you may immediately have something, and I had one that I wanted to change immediately, and I finally decided to let go of, and in my case, it was the gender of the participants at the top, because us researchers like to get really vested in how gender is portrayed in different media. And it turned out, I mentioned it, and so did several other researchers, but when we put it in front of focus groups, which included a lot of same-sex participants, we didn't get that. So we've been kind of back and forth on where to leave it. Some states have had us change it. Some have made it more generic. It's not quite as engaging. It's one of those sticky little things with media where you got to be careful about, like, who wants to genericize things, or how do you do it? And you can also do it like in some of the animated segments, we just switch them around. You know, we do, because it's not just one thing. But those are things you got to kind of deal with as you move through things. If we're really lucky, I'll be able to click that first link and it's gonna work. But we'll see. The quick steps are the first three animated segments. They explain things. How much time do I have before I tried to do that?
Eight minutes.
I got plenty of time. So we have this thing. The first one is just, what the heck is this thing we're talking about? And the second one is, how do I talk to my partner? Simple enough. You know, how am I going to tell my partner about this? That's not so easy. And we have some video models of that as well, by the way. Big thing around all of that and around the messaging inside those two pamphlets that we had before is, you know, the tricky balancing act is, you don't want to tell them, well, you know, you can tell them that you don't know where it came from. Because it is possible that the SDI didn't come into the relationship. But really what we try to do is get people to understand that you don't necessarily have to hit that issue first. Who the heck brought this into the relationship? What you really have to deal with first is getting people treated. Then, whether or not your relationship is a strong and healthy relationship is going to depend on how you two work together to decide how that actually happened and how you feel about it. But that's a tricky messaging thing that throughout, it's not really, I can't fix it in a piece of paper. But and we happen to have some of the animated segments. And then the other one is for the partner to watch. I'll go ahead and try to watch it, and we'll see. It is animated. It's supposed to be a little edgy as I can be, and still, oh, it's going to kill me. And watch, we'll see how smart I still am all through. So it's about 2 to 3 minutes long, that particular segment. It is actually in use in New York. So what I wanted to mention is, so what we're working on now is from baseline to local. We can't use these everywhere because every time somebody sees it, they're like, you know, that's almost what we need, but not exactly, because they've changed the messaging. So what we're doing now is, at no cost to the different states and jurisdictions that are implementing, we're changing the media. And I fight a rear guard action. I sort of see myself as the gatekeeper as to when is a self-anointed role. When is a change really necessary, and when is it just something somebody thinks is a good idea? Because what I really don't like is the notion of sort of this diffusion of what it looks like everywhere you go. That's a problem when CDC fails to actually have, and this is true of health in general, when there's no meat, there's no mandated way to do something. Rather, it's a recommended way, and you can do it in different places. So I sort of try to bounce back. I'm a little difficult to work with sometimes, but I tell people right up front that, you know, I'm getting paid by the government, and I'm wanting to help you, but if you want it somehow different for some reason, you kind of convince me. So we're changing it. They only have it for chlamydia, and they had some very specific legislative and regulatory messaging, so we've been adapting that for them. It's currently the paper materials are in use in all of their clinics, in the public health clinics. And the What is Partner Care, they have one version up and running, but we're changing it around just a little bit, and it's in part of their clinic loop now. So the things that patients see whenever they go in, every place you go, you'll see this messaging. So that's what they did with that. This is the version of some of the tailorization of it. Clearly, they wanted to get rid of some of the gender. The problem with genericizing gender on things is the generic version is male. I pointed that out. They wanted it anyway. So I went ahead and changed it. We added in some resources to show that here in New York we do it a different way. So it's like, how do we slide things in and out? It's been interesting for me because what's really... Time. Okay, so what's really been fun for me is I've never thought about this idea of creating baseline materials and how you might then worry about making those anything, whatever the intervention is, be both standardized but easily tailorable, especially if it's in multiple media. You know, so how can you have a set of videos that sort of work, but then key components can easily be slid in and out? Didn't think of it that way when we started off because didn't know that was really what we're charged in. But it's really an interesting problem. It's the same problem we're faced with if you happen to do STD work in schools. Because in schools, used to be you created one video. That was all you had. And then it was a CD-ROM, but that's all you had. But with schools now, we can deliver some things on the web, and it can be CMS-based, content management system web-type things, and it means that all of the materials can be tailored by the schools. That's not one and done. We don't have that hard decision. So it's a similar thing, but in this case, it was about how the different wording and things change. So, lessons learned. Unmandated and mandated national recommendations make standardized materials impossible. I won't even say difficult, if not impossible. Just, you can't do it. Localizing from the baseline is really effective. Tailoring it can be inefficient if there's too many cooks. What I found in a couple of the states I've worked with is there's no one point person who's saying things, so you get some feedback, and then you get more feedback, and it's like, guys, straighten up. Significant changes should lead to revalidation. I've tried to stress to a couple of the states, you know, if you change the wording that I validated with focus groups and through studies, there comes a point where I need to just tell you, if you're not revalidating this, I'm really nervous about it. So that's the main big things. I have a couple of recommendations for things you can go. You're welcome to visit our site, partnercare.org. And then the plug for the coffee place again was, of course, Chinatown Coffee, just a couple blocks down that way, 5th and H. Get some coffee. It was really good. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your enthusiasm and very fun presentation. That is Kelly.